Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We've got Forest and we've got Everton and Chelsea haven't been charged.
Because they haven't breached financial fair play.
A manager has to get the best out of that the group of players he's working with, and I don't think he's done that.
Is Chelsea a world-class football club?
Right now they're not, because they're not challenging for the biggest trophies.
In order to be a world-class football club again, you're going to need a world-class manager. I'm not so sure Raheem Sterling's pulled up any trees. I'm certainly think Cole Palmer has.
Still should be in England squad for me.
Sterling?
Yeah.
Really? Welcome to episode 14 of Simon and Souness. Graham?
I want to kick off this week. Yeah. Can you explain to me and our viewers the workings of financial fair play? We've got Forest and we've got Everton.
But Chelsea haven't been charged.
And Chelsea haven't been charged.
Because they haven't breached financial fair play.
And if explain they had it to me.
Well, it's very simple. If you've lost £105 million over 3 seasons, then you will be in a situation where you're being charged for breaching financial fair play. Nottingham Forest clearly have. Nottingham Forest didn't have £105 million. They carried 2 seasons of championship losses, which were £22 million a season. And then the 35 for the Premier League, they breached £61 million. They lost £61 million, more than £61 million. Going to Everton, they lost much more than £105 million. Chelsea, if Chelsea had breached financial fair play for season 22-23, because what happens is when the financial year for the season 22-23 finishes in June, you produce your accounts, you give them to the Premier League by December the 30th, right? If you've breached more than £105 million over that 3-year period, they charge you on January the 14th. Mm. They've charged Forest and they've charged Everton because they did.
All right.
Clearly, as a result of the finances of season 2021, 21-22 and 22-23.
Explain to me, Simon, how amortisation works.
If you buy a player for £100 million, Graham, and you put him on a 4-year deal, every year that player is worth £25 million less on your balance sheet. So if you bought a player for £100 million, at the end of the first year, he's worth £75 million, right? So you've lost £25 million, and that goes to your profit and loss. If you buy him for £100 million and you put him on an 8-year deal, he only loses £12.5 million a year. Which means in the first year, you're not £25 million worse off on a £100 million player. You're £12.5 million worse off. So Chelsea looked at the system and said, the Premier League rules say I can depreciate or amortise my players over the contract length. So what I'm going to do is, being a commercial man that deals in a world of private equity and businesses, why do I depreciate my players over 4 years when I could depreciate them over 8? And then subsequently, I can buy more players and I can compete now. That's Chelsea's thinking. They changed the rules because of the cartel at the top of the Premier League decided, hang on a second, that means Chelsea can spend £1 billion and perhaps not be consequence in the short term, which is why they changed it.
If you were Ted Boyd, do you think he's... If you were in his shoes, do you think he's regretting buying Chelsea?
I think he's probably regretting... I think
Todd's the way he's gone on the splurge and spent all this money?
No, because he said he was going to do it.
Is he regretting the way he's gone about it?
No, I don't think that kind of personality regrets things that they do. I think they regret things they don't do. Mm. He said when he bought Chelsea, what was the first thing they said? We're going to spend £1 billion.
Yeah.
We're going to make £1 billion or £1.7 billion available. We're going to make £1.7 billion available for this football club.
And I'm going to be the interim sporting director.
I don't know, Gray. I think that's certain wags within the media misrepresenting what he was doing. I'm not going on the owners' union side of things here. But if there's an argument which says, if you want to know what other people are doing, get yourself involved in understanding what they're doing.
But he did see it.
He said that he was going to be involved in the sporting director's role, but that would have, if he's doing it in isolation, if he's doing it without reference and without any kind of football intelligence, and I know you'll make the argument about Marina and about Bruce Buck, and that's a more complicated situation than just booting him out the door. Mm. Yeah, but Peter Cech debunked that. He turned around and said on Sky 2 or 3 weeks ago, I'd already decided I was going. Mm. So he debunked the idea that Todd Bowley came in like some, you know, North American gunslinger, getting everybody out of the way because they were not fitting his objective. I think there's a, where Todd Bowley will regret, like we all do, I regret some of the things I did at the beginning of my tenure by allowing
the media to get onto something, listening to the wrong people. He's obviously listening to the wrong agents.
But in order to listen to the wrong people, Gray, you've got the right people, you've got to listen to the wrong people first to be able to distinguish between the two. In an ideal world, you know, you take a day, go out on the first date, you get lucky first night. In an ideal world, you play blackjack, you get 21 in your first hand. In the real world, you know, you kiss some frogs and also you pick a bad hand every now and again. But you have to find out your own intelligence. And if you're really lucky, you alight upon good people around you. I mean, don't tell me that Roman Abramovich got it right from the first get-go.
No, he
had Pini as a Harvey in that situation.
They
sold him everything.
Yeah, his trousers taken down to the
game, but he quickly learned. In a year.
He quickly learned.
In 2003, they win the league in 2005.
That's what Abramovich did. He quickly learned who are the ones he listened to.
And I think Bowley will do the same. But I also think it's a different time, a different space. And I think that some of the players, you and I have discussed this, that he wanted to buy, haven't been bad players. There were other people in for them. Other people were in for Lavia. Your mob over at Liverpool were in for him. Other people were in for Caicedo. Your mob at Liverpool were in for him. So all he did was pay more money for other players that people want to buy. And if he's not complaining about it, then I suppose why should we be on his behalf?
All right. If you're him, do you rebuild at Stamford Bridge or do you go to a Greenfield site elsewhere?
Oh, I think it's an awful situation for a London football club because it's so difficult to do. I mean, Roman Abramovich wanted to rebuild Chelsea, didn't he? Because you've got two problems there. You've got the Chelsea pitch owners, and you don't even own the pitch yourself. Then you've got traffic congestion in London. And Abramovich, I think, at the time said, well, I'll alleviate the traffic congestion by building another bridge. And the Mayor of London said, you can't just build bridges willy-nilly. Yeah. There's a discussion. I've seen plans for them to build a new Stamford Bridge
going to go to
on top of the Albert Hall. Yeah, I mean,
they were going to go to Battersea.
Well, round the corner from me. Yeah, but down by the power station sort of area. But I think
the power station.
Well, that's all being regenerated anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Yeah. Prior to them,
yeah,
I think they were making the noises that were going to go there.
Well, it depends. I mean, Earl's Court seems like a light.
They've now bought the Chelsea Pensioners building next door, haven't they?
Have they? I don't know. But the question you're asking me is, what would I do if I was in that situation? Well, first of all, prices of property in London are ridiculous. I mean, Tottenham were relatively fortunate in terms of that they had that land from a long period of time.
Yeah, but price of land in Chelsea is...
Exactly. And so with it was Roman Abramovich, given the fact that he wasn't buying football for a commercial agenda, he was buying it for a different agenda, then maybe I would, if I was in Abramovich's shoes, I would look to build a new stadium, ideally on a newer site that gave me opportunities, because you've got a whole raft of challenges at Stamford Bridge that won't enable you to get to 65,000, 70,000, which is where Tottenham and Man United and Arsenal have gone to. So it's not a straightforward answer. And when
you look at Spurs Stadium now...
That's ridiculous.
I don't know about you, but I can't tell you a better stadium.
There isn't, that's why.
Anywhere in the world for football.
There isn't. But anywhere in the world for everything as alongside football as well. People will laugh and scoff at Daniel Levy getting involved with F1 and this, that and the other. But the revenues that they're about to generate out of that stadium, they're getting 2.5 million visitors a year coming to Tottenham's Hotspur Stadium as a result of attendances, but also other events.
It's not easy to get to.
No? You asked me about Chelsea and Bowley's behaviour and their overspend and the challenges that he's brought about for himself, and he's got a own nose because he decided to be front and centre. He puts Pochettino in the dugout, who I think is a bridesmaid. I like him. I think he's a nice fella. I think he's a good football coach. I'm not sure he's a great leader of men into the battle where you win things as a result of it. But what about you? I mean, are you a fan of Pochettino?
I would not have been critical When he got the job, I think he's a very steady manager, a modern manager. And by that, I mean, you know, he's not confrontational. He would appear to keep the players on side. But I see a frustrated manager right now, because I think he's tried everything. You know, he's tried everything to get a tune out of them. And ultimately, a manager has to get the best out of the group of players he's working with. And I don't think he's done that. I think that group are better than what they're showing and have been showing us.
Is Chelsea, Graham, a world-class football club?
Right now they're not, because they're not challenging for the biggest trophies.
Put aside,
I mean, what is a world-class football club? Historically, certainly when they're Abramovich serial winners, they won a couple of Champions Leagues.
Yeah. And they've also won a lot of Premier Leagues.
Three or four leagues. Yeah. That makes them a big club. Are they a member of that elite clubs? Who would be in that group? You have to put Man United and Liverpool in there, Man City.
Yeah. Bayern Munich,
Real Madrid, Barcelona.
I think
that maybe, you asked me that 5 years ago, they were in that group. I think now they're just outside.
Let me tell you the reason why I'm posing it that way is because it leads to the question, in order to be a world-class football club, you have to have world-class managers. And when Chelsea kicked on with Mourinho after Claudio Ranieri, he was a world-class manager, right?
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it. Came in, said what he was going to do, and then had the audacity to go and do it. My question is about Pochettino, which is, in order to be a world-class football club again, you're going to need a world-class manager. Is Pochettino a world-class manager? He's had the Tottenham job and got him to Champions League final, got no investment from Daniel, and then eventually ends up with PSG.
You see, I spoke to my wife about this last night, and she's not interested in football.
Mm-hmm.
Ancelotti, is he a world-class manager?
I would argue most likely yes.
How did he do at Everton?
But if you're looking at, Everton's not a world-class football club. It's not.
But if he was a world-class manager, he would have, which I think he is. Mm. It's what the criteria is.
And what have they done since he went? And what were they doing before he got there?
But he didn't make giant strides. If you look at his CV, he's going to improve anyone wherever he goes, Ancelotti. There wasn't that much of a difference at Everton. So the point I'm making is, players, the most important people at your football club. Now, Pochettino came to our country, started at Southampton, had a good group of players. I suppose it finished 8th, 9th, 10th. Got the chance to go to Spurs, struggled to begin with. Then he got Harry into the team around about November. I think Harry got about 18 goals, and the rest is history. Got him to the final of the Champions League. They didn't kick off.
Well, then you had the advent of Dele Alli, didn't you? And you had Eric Dier coming through, and you had a very dynamic side.
So he inherited a healthy, eventually, not to begin with, but eventually he got it going there. Then he goes off to, was it PSG? Won a league there. He's come back, and he's huffing it. You have to see, and he would tell you he's huffing and puffing. Mm. He's not getting the tune he thought he'd get out of these players. They are better than what they're showing.
Do you think the definition of a world-class football manager is how many trophies you've got at the end of the day? You talked to me the other day about legends. We were discussing the idea that Klopp is a legend. And I said, yeah, I think he's a legend for Liverpool. I'm not sure he's a legend in Premier League terms. And then you said, he's won the Champions League. By my definition, that makes him a legend.
Mm-hmm.
So going on to the definition of this much overused expression as a world-class manager, is it simply trophies that give you that opportunity to be called that overused expression, world-class or so?
But no two stories are the same.
Then that makes the Everton argument, doesn't it?
You know, Di Matteo at Chelsea.
Well, exactly.
Comes in.
The Champions League.
But he will be remembered. In Chelsea, he'll go down in history books. He was the first one to win a Champions League for them.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll go down in history as being an absolute legend.
So what is it then? If you're not looking at trophies...
I think legendary managers, I think longevity has to come into it.
World class.
I think longevity has to come into it. You know, you look at we're talking about Jurgen Klopp. This is his second team at Liverpool.
Mm.
If they end up winning two or three trophies this year, then I think that just adds to his status as a world class manager.
Do you think he's up there with? I mean, Pochettino sort of fits into a look and feel of certain managers. Certainly, the Arteta look and feel, which is dynamic, smooth, quite media savvy managers, but do you think he's up there with, say, Arteta and Ange Postecoglou? Do you think Pochettino is above that bracket of manager, beneath that bracket of manager?
I would put them all in the same bracket. I'm thinking Arteta's won an FA Cup. He's doing a grand job as we speak. Pochettino's yet to win anything here in the UK, I think I'm right in saying.
Correct.
Who was the other one you mentioned?
Postecoglou.
Postecoglou, he's not on the list yet. He's got to win something.
Mm.
But he's doing a very good job.
But in your perception, I mean, you look at things, you've got very definite views on things. You'll have already worked out in your mind whether you're having somebody or not, right?
That one at the end of the career is show me your medals.
Yeah. But when we're talking about current managers right now that are likely to achieve things, and ultimately, you know, Chelsea's job, the reason for Chelsea is to win the Premier League, right?
Yeah.
The reason for Arsenal is beginning to assume the role of beginning to win the Premier League. The reason for Ange Postecoglou is to bring Daniel with him to give him the tools to be right at the top of the Premier League.
Spurs supporters will be very happy with Ange right now. Depending, and we have had this conversation before, if you go back in Spurs history, get to the final of the Champions League against Liverpool and Madrid with Pochettino, they didn't strengthen after that. That was the time to kick on. So Ange this year does really well. They end up going into the Champions League, I would think.
Yeah.
Do they kick on and give Ange a better chance next year to do even better? We can't answer that. If they've got the same group of players again next year, I think that'll be more of the same. Mm. Which that might be enough success for Spurs to get into the Champions League on a regular basis right now. That might be enough for them. For Pochettino, I think it's a big job right now to get them up to that level. Unless there's been a year this year of bedding these players in, understanding the demands, understanding the manager, and they're a different Chelsea next year. But right now, you'd have to say these players are underperforming at Chelsea.
Just as an aside, do you give Levy a lot of credit for Postecoglou and what's happening right now? Because he's recruited, you've been critical of him. You call him my mate every time I give some context to the fact that maybe there's a different argument to be had rather than just Daniel Levy's the reasons why they don't succeed.
Well,
do you give him credit for Pochettino? Do you now give him credit for
picking him?
Yeah.
Of course. And I think I give more credit to the manager. The bravery shown in playing the brand of football. But I come back to my criticism of...
But that's his brand. Is that bravery? That's just what he does.
That's the way he plays. But my criticism of Daniel is that he's been in charge 22, 23 years and won one League Cup.
Mm.
Tottenham was my first love. I know Tottenham are a fabulous football club. I know Tottenham are a big football club.
Mm.
And for shareholders, if there were any, for the banks, as a business model to make money, that's one you'd follow, what Daniel Levy has done. But it's not a success. It's not a formula to bring you trophy after trophy. Now, that might not be his end game. It might be just to build the asset and one day sell it and make a shitload of money.
I don't think his end game, without speaking for him, is to put the club in hock to do it.
Oh.
Everyone wants to win, right? Come on.
Yeah.
Right. Talking about winning, I mean, I think he must have practiced this in the mirror and got his little mates, as I said the other day, in the overlap to all snigger around the screen. The blue billion-pound bottle jobs. That was the description that our mate Gary Neville said was the Chelsea's contribution to the cup final against Liverpool. Do you think that's a fair observation for him, or do you just think...
That's a game they could have won. That's unfair. That's a game they could have won. I mean, there wasn't a lot between the teams. I think the criticism that Chelsea would have got is because Liverpool had the team they had on the pitch at the end of the game. You know, that still weren't rolled over by the billion-pound team that Chelsea were. These were kids. Was there four or five kids on the pitch at the end? Players who wouldn't be first choice in the first 11. So
a bit like the Liverpool side that turned up recently against Man City.
Yeah,
not so many, but still not standing yet. Quite a few young kids in that side that should have beaten Man City recently.
Yeah.
Or could have beaten them.
Well, it should have beat them, yeah. Should have beat them. So I think bottle jobs, cup finals, in a game that they played well enough to win. Keller made some great saves to keep them out. And I wouldn't call them bottle jobs that day. I just think...
Because we both think that Arsenal bottled the league, right?
Yes.
And we both call them bottle jobs for that.
But that wasn't in one 90-minute game.
No, and that's why I think it's probably an unfair analysis.
Yeah, I would say it's unfair. It's a 90 minutes and things can happen in the 90 minutes. With the Arsenal situation last year, you know, they knew what they had to do. It wasn't just a case of losing just
and
the
they,
one
and,
game.
And they didn't do it.
Yeah.
We've seen recently a couple of players leave Man City and join Chelsea in Raheem Sterling and Cole Palmer with varying levels of success. Where are you on both those players? Because both of them potentially will be making an argument for the Euros. I'm not so sure Raheem Sterling's pulled up any trees. I certainly think Cole Palmer has. But you look at players differently than I do. What do you make of Raheem Sterling's direction of travel at Chelsea?
I think
and then got, subsequently Cole Palmer's?
Yeah, because of what he's done for England in the past. You take him to the Euros. You know, the one thing the defenders are absolutely terrified of is genuine pace. He's got that. I think he's suffered by being in a team that's misfiring. Raheem Sterling, I think for Cole
are you
Palmer...
Big, I mean, I've never been a major admirer of his.
No,
I think he's
no,
all right.
No, I think he is a threat. I come back to you, that genuine pace frightens people. He's been a very good player. You know, a thing which is, you know, something that jumps out at me, for someone who's so good at so many different things, he's not a very clean kicker of the ball. You know, he's not. And the really top goal scorers have got zero backlift and they generate lots of power.
He's a scuffled winger, Raheem Sterling.
Yeah, but in vital moments, you know, being a clean kicker of the ball gets you lots of goals. And I just think he's in many ways, he's a near miss. But he still should be in England squad for me.
Sterling?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm.
On what? This season's performance?
I think, you know, go back to the goalkeeping situation. What goalkeepers is Gareth Southgate going to take to Germany?
Right.
Some of those goals,
who would be Raheem Sterling replacing if you're going to take him out?
Well, it's a squad game. It's a squad.
I know that, but it's 23 players in the squad, right? Wherever he is, 23, 22.
You're asking a Scotsman. I'm saying him... is someone you'd not want to play against, because him on his game terrifies you, because he's that, yeah, he's brave, he's strong, he can be very direct, and he's extremely pacey. Is he clinical enough when he gets there and choice of pass and when he's trying to score a goal? No. But that's not new this season. That's how he's been in his career. But he's still been a fabulous player.
What about Cole Palmer? I mean, a lot of people have made the comparison between, because he left City, and people will say, he must be looking over there, because Foden decided to stay at City, didn't he? Sancho goes off to Dortmund, and is successful
Foden,
at Dortmund.
Foden didn't, there were never
selling Foden.
But
that's my point. Foden stayed and bided his time. Cole Palmer didn't want to do that.
They were never selling Foden. I don't think they'd ever contemplated selling Foden.
That wasn't what I was saying.
How about coming here from a different place? I know the financial fair play. You know, he was brought up through the ranks, so it was like 60 or 60 mil they got for him.
40, wasn't it?
40.
But whatever, they got decent value.
I come back to it. If you're Pep Guardiola, and he is going to be, in his opinion, if Pep sanctioned the move, he said, yeah, we can sell him. I think that maybe tells you, they may say, to be kind to the boy, that it was just we had to cash in because of...
But did he sanction him? Because I think Pep was sort of saying, you'll get your chance, but you have to wait your time.
Well, I don't think he sells them. That's the top and bottom of it.
But isn't Guardiola one of those? Would you be one of those? If you're not with me, then you're against me.
No, I don't think you sell him. If you really, really think he's going to be a top, top player, you don't sell him.
So you don't think that the fact that the kid expressed desire to be somewhere else because he wanted to play first team football, a bit like Jadon Sancho did, and Jadon Sancho has proven...
I'm a case in point. I'm at Spurs.
Yeah.
In 19, I'm telling Bill Nick I should be in the first team.
Right.
He didn't think I should be in the first team. I kept telling him every time the team sheet went up, I shouldn't be, why am I not involved? In the end, they sold me.
To Middlesbrough.
Yeah they sold me to Middlesbrough for £30,000. But they obviously thought I was going to go anywhere and embarrass them. For £30,000, that's neither here nor there, is it?
But they were wrong.
Yeah.
So how's that comparison then?
Well, what I'm saying... they made their mind up on me. They were prepared to sell me.
Yeah, but they were wrong. Massively wrong.
I turned out to be wrong for them.
Yeah.
But my point is that the manager, Pep, decided to sell him because maybe he thinks he's not going to be what everyone else is seeing
now. With that in mind, given what you've seen from Cole Palmer this season, because he's probably the standout player at Chelsea.
I'd have a shout for Gallagher being their best player this year.
Okay, well, nip and tuck between him and Gallagher then. He's been a perceived success.
He's silky. You know, he's got highlights. He's got highlights on the team.
Do you like him?
I like him, and he will get better. I'm not saying he's a star now. in our football. He's silky. He's easy to like.
Right.
You know, he glides past people. He's got great feet. There's nothing to dislike about him. He's a promising young man. He's a promising young man for me.
But like Spurs selling you to Middlesbrough and then from Middlesbrough to Liverpool, right? And you go on to be part of a dominant Liverpool side. Do you think City will look back? I mean, I don't think they regret selling Sancho because we've seen that one play out the way it's played out. Do you, albeit he's back at
Dortmund? That's my point.
But do you think that City will look back on Cole Palmer? Because do you think there's a proper player in there? Do you think he's going to be a proper player? Do you think he's going to be an England player? And do you think City may regret having sold him?
There's no guarantees. I think I would say he will be a proper player one day. But there's no guarantee.
Right.
You know, I'll mention my favourite player. Do you think Fergie allowed Pogba to go all those years ago? Why do you think you let him go? You know, these are managers that it's not money. We need this money for X, Y, or Z, financial fair play, money we can use to buy someone else.
Fair enough.
That doesn't apply to City. It didn't apply to Manchester United. So I think the manager sanctioned those players because there was something in them they didn't quite fancy.
Right.
Now they sold me something they didn't fancy in them.
Yeah, but they were wrong.
Yeah.
And they couldn't have been further wrong, could they?
I
know you like talking about yourself, and that would be a happy subject.
As reluctant as I am to talk about myself, they were wrong. And maybe these players will prove the manager's wrong. Maybe Palmer will prove Pep wrong.
Do you think he's a good buy for Chelsea, Cole Palmer?
I think he's...
Chelsea as is, not Chelsea as will be.
See, you want players like him to come into teams that are doing well, playing with their tails up, playing with confidence, and you're dropping them in and out. He's been asked as a kid with no experience of the Premier League to come in and be a main man. It's a hell of an ask. But the guy's got qualities that very few people have. And there's nothing to dislike about him because he looks to have a fabulous work rate. He's certainly not frightened. He's silky on the ball, sees a pass, can score a goal, drifts past people for fun.
But not part of the conversation for the Euros.
I think it's a bit too early for him.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Right. My final question that we can both answer. I talked earlier on another show about United.
You do a lot of shows, by the way.
I do. But as you know, show United, right? Another one of these, not the one you and Jim did, which got 12
views. Not the one that was
the top. Not the one you and Jim did that got 12 views. The ones that we do, they get tens and hundreds of thousands, right? But United, how long will it take United to get back to its golden era? So the same question abounds for us both now. Given the fact we've spent the last 20 minutes talking about Pochettino, Chelsea and the do's and don'ts, right?
Well,
and Todd Bowley. How long do you think, I'll tell you what my view is, and you can tell me yours because yours is more prevalent first. You go first, and how long do you think it will take Chelsea
Man
to get
U.
back?
Or Chelsea?
Chelsea. We're talking about Chelsea.
Well, the hierarchy at Chelsea must be hoping, the supporters must be hoping that these players are just taking a year, these new players, to bed in, get a good look at the Premier League, and they'll kick on.
But what do you think?
Enzo Fernandez, Caicedo, not really showing £100 million player qualities right now. They have to improve. Jackson up front has to improve. They'll be hoping that these guys, this is another learning year for them. But after this, Well, not so much for Casado or Fernandez, because Fernandez, this is his second season. Casado knows about the Premier League, so they have to up their game. I'll try to cut them some slack there. I won't cut the slack. They're young, but they have to start turning up. Jackson, he has to start turning up, and others. And if they don't, they're going to have to go again in terms of spending money. Because that group of players, if that's their quality, they're a mid-table team. Mm. If that is their quality that they're showing this year, they're a mid-table team. And that won't be acceptable to the
current ownership.
The current ownership, or indeed the Chelsea fan base. They're a team that for 20 years, was it 19 trophies they won? They're a group of supporters that are used to seeing silverware on the team picture in August.
See, I said, and I think I've got myself universally sniggered at, that I felt that Chelsea would be in a situation to win the Premier League in the next 3 years. Not in.
And now?
Well, unless they change the way they're operating, unless they change the way they're buying, unless they get
let's
the balance.
Let's analyse what you're saying. Operating, buying.
Yeah.
So you're saying these current players aren't good enough?
I'm saying a lot of them aren't, no. And I don't think the manager is. If the objective is the golden era, the framing of this conversation between you and I is, how do you get back to the golden era of Abramovich? Well, the golden era of Abramovich was winning the league, right? So to get to that position, you've got to have a sea change in their current outlook in terms of what they're buying and get the balance right. They've got to make better decisions. You know, if you need to score goals, and buy a centre-forward that can score goals. Don't buy one that can't, in Nicholas Jackson. He wasn't even a centre-forward when they bought him from Villarreal, was he? He's an outside left, or an inside left, that's been turned into centre-forward because needs must. Buy a better balance of players, get a better manager. If they don't change with the direction they're going on...
But I come back to that.
There'll be 10 years before they win.
Football decisions being made by people who are not football people. I mean, they have, since day one that Boye took over, the first player he bought was a little Cucurella from Brighton about 60 mil.
Yeah, but Man United were screaming for 50 million.
No, but when we're screaming out for a centre forward.
Right.
But you know, centre forward should get you goals, Simon, get you what's the trouble.
You make this argument all the time about idiot guys coming in that don't understand the football business, that are the wrong people.
Not idiots.
Idiot guys in the world of football. Right, not win a world.
No,
of business.
Very sharp people have made money in many different
behave
areas.
Like idiots in the football.
They come into football and they think you can attach logic to football.
But you
forget that.
But you I concur with that. And I remember the first thing you ever said to me in the first game that I owned at Palace, played your Blackburn Rovers away, which
welcome
is welcome to the madhouse. Absolutely,
yeah.
Right. But the point is that it's not just idiot owner or guys coming from other backgrounds that make idiotic decisions. It's about football voices. They'll have listened to football voices, but the wrong ones. And United have had people in situ for 10 years buying £2 billion of a players that have been the wrong football voices.
See, with United, you can look at Ed Woodward and you can understand why he was in situ for so long. Because Woodward was a very smart commercial man, bringing in lots of money. So, but that's for me where the crux of the problem is and the criticism I would lay at the Glazier's door. You've seen what was happening. You must have thought Gil and Fergie go, there's our football knowledge gone out the door at the same time. Now we're putting it in the hands of someone who's not got football knowledge. And it was very obvious very quickly it wasn't working for them, and they never corrected that. That's a criticism I lay at their door.
I think Bowley will pivot quicker than Glazer did. Why? Because Glazer's paid nothing for Man United. It was a cash machine, whereas Chelsea isn't a quash machine, and it's cost £2.5 billion.
Who would he be answerable to?
He'll be answerable to the private equity guys that he's taken the money from in the first place, which includes himself, Ekbali. Whether those two guys are getting on is a different discussion. But they've got £2.5 billion of their money and other people's money. They didn't buy it as a philanthropic exercise. They didn't buy it because they wanted to image launder. They bought it because they wanted something from it.
To make money.
And that was success and money. Mm-hmm. I think unless they change, which I think they will, it'll be 10 years.
I'm going to put you on the spot here.
But if they change, I think they could win it in three. And I'm going to stay with the same thing as I said.
Do you know who they are listening to?
No.
And if you are, name. You do. Name names. You know who they're listening
to. No. I'm
right. Butler.
Nothing to do with Butler. Nothing to do with Butler. I just think that's someone else's job to tell you who they're listening to. Right. That's it for episode
15. Great way to end.
Well done. The blue billionaire bottle jobs are compounded. See you next time we're out.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day.
Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.